convene now our pre-council meeting for October 20th. The subject of the majority of this meeting is around our council communication and meeting practices. I want to thank staff attached a lot to our agenda for this evening. And I just like to ground set, part of this is just housekeeping. You'll notice in the attachments and agenda from 2019, with some of the things that the council then were talking about wanting to check. Some of them have been staff brought up. For instance, Sheila pointing out that there's a thing in the ordinance about not smoking in the council chambers that we could probably just eliminate since you can't smoke indoors. As well as other things about periods of time where we allow for public comment that had never been, or at least we can't find where it's officially in there. And so just kind of doing some of those housekeeping things. So I'm gonna kick it over to the crowd because I do have a few slides, but my guess is that this is really a council conversation and you're wanting us to kind of lead the discussion and potentially any updates, but as well as point out what you guys are aware of that probably need to be updated.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly it. The idea is for us to have a conversation. There's a lot of things that council kind of talks about, they have questions about where we're at with this, what does this look
like? On.
It should be on.
Okay.
All right. I'll just take it off.
There we go.
So that we can actually talk it to. And so it will give us an opportunity to have that conversation. I know the first thing, if you want to pull up the first slide, it's about public comment, time limits, stating war versus address. And some of these things we've talked about, but we've never really officially adopted as part of our ordinance. And so I'll open it for conversation.
Okay, so the first one I have a note on is in relation to the resolution from 1981, the R18881. This is the discussion that we want to probably amend this one to just clarify the 3 minutes given to people and that they can request 5 minutes if they're representing an organization that is affected by the legislation. Any comments on that? Any concerns or questions that council members have for that? And my assumption is from this one to Carlin is that you all will take like kind of the feedback from here and then craft something to come back to council for either official adoption or as a report and then for official adoption.
And that would be the idea. So some of the things are like, this will be codified, so we bring the ordinance back. Some of the other one may just be practices that we'll say, here's our routine, our practice. One of the things we've been talking about is putting together the council handbook. So this stuff can be included in those council handbooks. So new council members coming on board will have that same information.
Okay. Yeah, Vera, you're heading up.
I noticed in this same one, it mentions that any person can be granted an additional 5 minutes on top of the 3 to 5 minutes by any council member. We're talking about number 4, right?
I see that, yeah.
Is that something we are also cleaning up and cleaning out of the ordinance?
I think, because how long have we been doing the current practice? Are we aware of?
Before this,
I think that's a good one to clean up as well. Yeah.
So you want to remove that?
I would say, yeah, because it hasn't been a practice.
I haven't seen it, but I don't know that there might not be an occasion where we would want to hear more from someone. But I don't know that I would want to leave that up to one council member to do. I think, though, if there could provision that would allow us to extend someone's time if the council approves it together.
General consensus?
For the idea, consensus of council. For instance, if it's like an applicant or in one of the things that we want to ask additional questions of something.
Yeah, I mean, I just wouldn't want to leave the possibility, I would want to leave the possibility open that if there's someone that I'd really like to hear more from you, then we provide that opportunity somehow.
All right, so adding to number 4, the piece about 3 minutes and then 5 minutes on affected organization by the thing, and then person may be granted additional 5 minutes upon consensus of council.
I was going to say additional time or additional 3 to 5 minutes or something like that.
Additional time works. Based on consensus of council. It's a good one to clarify. And then also, just as a note, removing number 8, the smoking is not prohibited.
and a person should use ashtrays. We can take out nowadays. Unless you really want to keep it in there. Sorry. And then is this the one too where we have the ward and versus address? Is that in this one?
Number three.
Okay, so one of the things that she was able to, this was originally to find people's names and how to spell them to make never mind. Oh, Sheila's on. Hold on. No.
This is obviously from 81.
Oh, right.
When we didn't have places to search the way we do now. So
that's what I'm saying.
No. This is common practice to ask for a state for somebody's name and address. Understand now, due to technology, there's more concerns about that. And our minutes are now online, videos are online from ever ago, so people might be uncomfortable with their address being out there. But the original reason is so council knew where they were in proximity to whatever project or whatever. Because if it's a thing on Ash that this person lives on, Business Loop, like how much more do you care about? How much comments about the specific project weigh compared to somebody who's on the street or vice versa? So I think that was the logic in requiring name and address. But
so we could remove in that last sentence. First, state their name and ward of residence for the record, because I think the ward has been useful.
Yes.
And then this one has, and the SBCs is in another one, right? That's the next one? Yeah. Anything else on 188 that members view need to be reviewed?
Yes. Because this was the section also where we're talking about when someone is ruled out of order. So there were conversations about would we consider inappropriate language out of order? And I'm also wondering if there is a point at which nonverbal communication becomes threatening or out of order. Because right now it only lists spoken communication.
You're talking about number five?
Yes.
And then number seven, kind of related. Number seven is about what happens if they're disrupting the meeting.
Yes.
And number five is kind of what leads to that.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Did you want to comment on that?
Just a little word choice in seven. Chief of police or his representative.
Yeah. The gender improved. Yeah. Anyone have ideas related to what Vera, did you have ideas on what you would want to add to five or clarify number five?
So I believe one of the suggestions in the report, or at least things mentioned in the report, included inappropriate language or like cursing. I think that could be worth adding as something that could potentially rule someone out of order. I think an occasional slip of the tongue would not immediately have someone out of order, but if they are repeatedly cursing and seemingly intentionally cursing, that probably would get to that point. And then the nonverbal piece, I don't have a specific suggestion on. I'm wondering what other people are thinking.
I was just gonna say that Barbara has listed that for disrupting the council in the past. I think it's still on her regular snapping, booing, hissing, yelling. All of those things are reasons to. And it's not just the speaker, that's usually more the audience.
And those are verbally listed but not included in this.
Right.
So we could do kind of a sub bullet under that one that includes those additional ones that I call it at the beginning of the meeting. I think the other thing that's been a practice, and this is really because of the live stream, that staff has routinely kind of discouraged like signage and things, namely because it then impedes people's ability to see both the screen as well as the audience in that. So that would be your kind of nonverbal one to put in there as well.
Yeah, Jackie.
Just playing devil's advocate, what is going to be the legal pushback on this regarding free speech?
Right. Becky, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll need to work on the exact language, but I think there's reasonable parameters that can be developed as far as decorum and broaching, you know, interruptions that we can work within those parameters.
Okay. So I think for to come in this one, probably wouldn't just be the full-on ordinance coming back to us, if it seems like there might be some clarifications for language, but might come back as a report, and
yes,
then kind of that review before we then do any sort of adoption or coming back for a vote. Anything else to 188? There's a few in here, and I don't know, Sheila, if you want to, from your 2019 report, there's a lot of other potential ones, including, and my question is always, how much do you have to codify of these, you know, or how much of it, this is just kind of our administrative practice? So, you know, part of the conversation that we've had as well is about, you know, whether or not people have to sign up, like these public comment cards, if that becomes a thing we want to consider. The discussion too about whether a speaker may yield their time to another. You know, I mean, like, I don't know necessarily if those need to be codified so much as they're just things to bring up to the point of question. One is the fourth bullet here, the total amount of time, and this is one that people have messaged me about. And this is the total amount of time a single individual may engage in public comment at any particular meeting. For example, New Orleans limits any speaker to a total of 6 minutes per council meeting and allows the speaker to divide their time among the council agenda items. I would just say on that one, I would think that we also should talk about our own limiting of speaking. So that might lead into a whole other one, just a thought I had. But that's limiting my own speech, so maybe I don't want to talk as much. Yeah, Nick.
Well, the question that comes to mind, and it did while I was reading this first time, is think of what are we trying to accomplish with these. And I think we want to be sure that the public has ample opportunity to speak on any given thing. At the same time, we want to be sure that we're having efficient meetings that that address the concerns we have in such a way that we're able to do that well. You know, there's like this idea that we put an 11 o'clock, for instance, somewhere in this one, so that we stop at 11 o'clock, we put a hard and fast rule on that. That I'd be open to having that conversation. It's the last bullet,
yeah,
it's the second page. I'd be open to having that conversation, but what does that? How does that impact the impact? How does that impact the effectiveness of the meeting itself? So I'm not saying one way or the other about that. I'm just saying we need to keep the end in mind of what we're trying to do in addressing any of these and all of them.
Yeah, I think, like, my thought in reading this from 2019, my thought was is that, you know, if you have an end time, the idea is so that, you know, people can get home, right, and get to bed, and also you don't have people making decisions about big things at midnight. And so my thought would be was that if we found ourselves bumping, if we were piloting that, we found ourselves bumping up to that, then we would have to decide, is it the number of items on the agenda that we're limiting? Is it the number of comments? Is it our comments? Like how long we allow ourselves to talk at the end? What would it be that would, what is making us go past that time? But yeah, I wouldn't want to introduce a time limit before we were also like, what's the end goal? And it, to me, it was to be an efficient use of our time, but we still want to have obviously a public engagement. Yeah, Val.
I would very much not want to limit the number of times the public can step up to speak. I would, at least not at this time. We've had, even recently, we've had people who had expertise in more than one area, or had expertise that applied to multiple things on the agenda and spoke on multiple items in a way that enhanced my understanding. I don't want to limit that unnecessarily. I think that if we are being proactive with our 3 minutes, then that really doesn't seem to pile up as much as you would think to me.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that these are business meetings also, so we do want to hear from the from citizens, but we also need to make sure we get the business done that we need to do.
Yeah, here. Just to say, I think with the potential established adjournment time, I am all for shorter meetings. I think in the reality of it, I don't know that we would be able to accomplish our work unless they became shorter, more frequent meetings. I don't know that we can cut our time and keep our current schedule and continue to get everything passed that we need to get passed. So I think that if we open up that conversation of shorter meetings, which I would be all for, we would also need to talk about us meeting more regularly.
Yeah, and I'll point out, and this is part of the conversation, especially as we get into the virtual meeting that has that more flexibility with it. You know, in the last 3 years, our meetings have, I think, been shorter, but it's been as the result of having more work sessions. So more of that. And so, because the idea is you can get a lot more of those questions done, go back into your ward, ask clarifying, you know, with your community members. And then when you come to vote, you know what I mean, you have more conversations, and that's the intent behind that. Yeah, Don.
To your point, I was going to ask
it. You can take it out if it comes easier.
Or to your point, has anyone taken the time to determine what is currently our average adjournment over, say, the last 6 months to a year?
I know
you may not have it. If you don't have it off the top of your head, that's fine, because we're not settling anything tonight.
I did something about a year ago but off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you, where I kind of showed the times that on the longer ones, it tended to be because of a big topic item, mm-hmm. like one or two items just taking up the majority of the time. So the only thing I can suggest, if that is something, like, and you can't control, like, you have no knowledge, at least right now, we have no knowledge of how many people are going to come to speak or whatever. If you guys think that's a problem, one way to limit the number of speakers potentially is that comment card, but that is extra work. Like, you have to sign up in advance to mm-hmm. speak. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you want to do that, because sometimes we do have valid comments from somebody who just happens to be in the meeting for something else and was like, oh, I didn't plan on talking about this, but I mean, it to me, it was big, like something that was controversial or something, you know?
Right. But I mean, we generally have an idea what those are. We can anticipate larger crowds.
So anyway, I did the analysis in January, but again, it's similar to Sheila. Some of those are big ones. So from April 2022 to about January, I think is when I did this, 62 regular meetings. 15 of those meetings were they were under 3 hours. 12 meetings were 4 hours, and 6 of those were 5 hours. But those also include like a budget work session. Like that would be if we had like the budget longer one. So those are usually the rare ones that we had. But also like the water treatment plant upgrade was one. The Wabash Station campaign was one that went long. So those are, and I'm happy to share my analysis. Hope you want to see that.
No, but that kind of gives us an idea. It sounds like the majority actually were finishing before 11.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, the majority is definitely a 10. Betsy, did you have another follow-up to that?
No, I was just going to say 10 or 30. You know, certainly they've gotten shorter since I've been on council. But part of it is we've been able to address some of the issues that the citizens have had. We used to get a lot of comments about our homeless population and not having a place for them to stay and not being able, you know, when it was really cold that we had no place for them. So some of that, I think we've listened to folks and we've been able to with the current guidance to find ways to address some of those issues. So that also is making me sure.
Yeah. And I think DeCarl has also been trying to ensure, like, there's some things like planning and zoning related, they're on a time schedule, you can't control that. But when there is the ability to control timing, I think he tries to do that as well also.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sheila. Okay, so for 188, 81 as well. Oh, yeah, sorry, Devin.
I have one more.
Yeah.
I'm the 188, 81. Number one, public may comment, testify on all ordinances of final passage and all public hearings before the city council. Is that the one where put into place the way we currently do things. We have public comment on second read when we're getting ready to vote.
Part of any other part of the ordinances, though? Different ordinances?
So the either the charter, I think it's the city charter that allows for, and let me find it, it allows for all anybody to act, like, you know, we have the consent agenda. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to speak on a topic, they can ask for that to be removed.
Right. No, my question is, final passage. I interpret that to mean
the second read and vote. Yeah, because
okay.
That's when you're
right.
Could potentially
pass it. Yeah, and my question, and I made this in fact earlier today to the mayor. There are other councils, specifically Springfield, that they actually do their public comment on first read. That way, whatever questions are generated, we have time to look into it rather than the 15 minutes between then and when we vote. So now if that's probably a bigger, larger discussion than for tonight. So this, just be aware of it. I guess this is one we would have to change if we were to go that route. And there were a couple of questions that need to be addressed. So again, that's a larger discussion, not for tonight, but just so we know what we would have to change if we change the way we conduct.
So do they not allow comments? At the time they vote, they only allow it the first time?
That's where they get the majority of their comment. Again, that's something I'd have to revisit.
Okay.
The former mayor of Springfield gave a presentation at the elected leaders training that the Missouri Municipal League puts on, and he mentioned that. And I thought that's actually a good idea because, again, many times questions come up, and it's like, okay, I don't have time to look into it before I have to vote on this. So this would then, you know, allow time, and then, unless there's something significantly changed because of that, then it would essentially, that would be more of the consent agenda to go forward.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Just as an additional consideration to your suggestion here, I can think of a small handful of times over the past few years where something came up planning related about shared easements, property rights that could still be sorted out between neighboring property owners and therefore it was tabled for that. If we accepted our public comment, and of course I defer to planning on that, but if we accepted our public comment at the first read, I wonder if we could prevent those kinds of tabling actions from coming up, because I don't think they're the best for anyone involved.
Yeah, Don, can I ask, do you want to see about following up to get some more questions answered on that one?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, no, because I think that's a good point. My assumption would be then is if anything happened, it would just have the supplemental memo coming in with whatever sort of changes were as a result. Carla, do you have any questions about that? Or have you had that happen in any other cities you've worked in that have items that have two reads and they do public comment on the first read rather than the second? Or three reads, sorry.
Trying to think. I have, but usually the agenda's a lot shorter and it's not as much on first read too. So
I know it's funny to follow the conversation about making meetings shorter and then open up everything.
Yes.
Because then you'd have comment on everything under first read versus just the old business public hearing stuff potentially.
Potentially.
Yeah, Jackie.
I suppose we'd flip
again. This is the discussion bigger than tonight, but if we're talking about signing up to speak, maybe first read public comment could be signed up only. Or the other way around, it could be open public comment the first reading, and then if they, you know, would like to speak on the second, the updated amendments would have to sign up. Just throwing out ideas.
Yeah, like you said, I'll follow up with Springfield on that.
Yeah, Val.
I can think of several situations where the first read was a heads up that it was coming up to community members too. And I can think of several situations where something came up and local interest groups weren't prepared for it to be on the agenda until they heard it on first read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's an opportunity for us to kind of do some additional research, and we can kind of take a look and see. We'll actually have one of our staff members kind of look at Springfield as well and kind of get an example of what's going on at their meetings. And we can bring that back as part of the report.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving on to resolution 101-14A. There's a couple cleanups on this one. One, removing the fax number request that they have, because that's not the most efficient use. And usually we just get spam faxes. So maybe removing that number will help reduce those. Is there any concern over removing the fax number to set up for scope of public comment? And then we can also add, because we do the submission online or via email, we can add that piece to this. It doesn't have to be written, like doesn't have to be handwritten composition via email, because that's how they do it now. Let's see. And then is this one we should also clarify, because we typically, where is it? We typically allow
for number four.
Oh, thank you. So we typically allow, or I at least allow 5 minutes if you do schedule public comment, and this says 3 to 5. I'm going to say we just eliminate the 3, 2, and just do the 5, because that's been the practice that I believe my predecessor also used. And I don't think anyone has ever kind of limited how much for scheduled public comment. That way it kind of helps clean up, because some people come up and they say, I'd like to request 5. And they're like, so those sort of cleanups. Is there any other changes to this one that we want to update? That's pretty self-explanatory. Okay. And then the next one is related to appointments to boards and commissions. This is one that we want to kind of clarify about how we this is the one where kind of clarifying, let me see which part it is. Number C for C. B. So one of the things that we found when Sheila did an analysis of people who apply to boards and commissions is that I think we went 3 years without anyone checking the newspaper box or then someone did right after we had done that analysis. But it was actually a re-applicant too, so I'm assuming they had multiple ways. So do you want to speak to how much we spend on advertising?
And I will say, since we first did the analysis, there have been a few more, but I would say probably between 5 and 7 at most to set that box. And like she said, there was at least one reapplicant, if not more. And we spend between $7,000 to $8,000 a year to put it in the Sunday papers at the Tribune and the Missourian. So it's in both papers now, and it's about $7,000 to $8,000 a year of the cost. So it's up to you guys if you think that's still reaching people, or if it's up to you on how you want to do that. Other ways we do it, and something else that probably ought to be cleaned up, is the use of media advisors. We actually do press releases. There's a terminology difference between the two that I think Sydney or somebody else can better explain, that media advisories go to news outlets, whereas press releases go to the public. Then we also do social media. It's annual vacancies because of how early those utility newsletters go out, being your utility bills. So how early they go out, we can only put annual vacancies in there, but we do put like which board and commission is coming up, look at our website. Obviously we put them on the website. So those are ways we do it now. Bill Canton, I don't know who's replacing him, and I don't know if he continued doing it, but I know at one point he was sending those out to the neighborhood associations he had contact information for. So, you know, there's other ways to get the word out and other ways we've been doing it. But so that's just a question for you all as to, in the future, do you want to continue putting it in the Tribune and the Missourian both? We want to choose one and things of that nature. Yeah, Nick.
So what box or boxes are people checking when they say that they learn about that? See, I hear it goes in different ways, but where are people mostly finding it, responding to it?
Well, if you look at their applications, that's
nice. Well, give me a minute.
Let's see. How did you, where
Where is it? How did you hear about this?
Where's the bottom?
How have you heard about the vacancy
letter?
That means reapplicant. How did you hear about the? How did you hear about the vacancy? Currently serving. How did you hear about it? Alright, this one has a lot of answers. Never mind, current commissioner. Good one.
Well. I think rather than going through,
I'm going through each one.
Yeah, if we could just go back and look and see, I think that would be helpful to know. This is just one of another one of those examples of how it's with all the different ways of communicating, it's just getting harder to communicate. And the question is, where are people looking for that information if they're looking for it at all, and how are they responding back? Where, in other words, which hooks are most effectively right
so
now?
Last year, I just got press release from city, so press release from city email for subscribing, and this one was KVIA, which would be as a result of sending out to news agencies the existing ones that you're putting out there. Yeah. Other questions on this one? Okay. Yeah, I feel like we're hitting a lot more people, especially as, and this is a reminder to council members too, is that when Sheila sends out that notification that it goes, is for us also to use our own to send it out, since people, even like you said, they're busy trying to get out the information. Yeah. Okay. Up next is our conversation around virtual attendance. Is this? Yes. Okay. So, what questions do you have? Do you guys have the guiding ones on this, or do you want us to lead this? I don't know, to Carlin, or it also might be a Becky law question, logistics.
Well, I think so. Kind of the questions is, you know, how do we want to move forward? I know there's a lot of questions from council members about when can we, what does that look like? And so it's just having that general conversation. I know Don shared what Springfield does, and you know, it's sound, it makes sense. And so it's just putting in a process.
Yeah. And I'll remind everyone that council does have the ability to do virtual participation in work sessions. In part, it was because of, since we don't have a vote, and the CMB scene is not as strict for a work session or pre-council. Similarly, because of the, we don't often live stream those, because those are some of the logistical questions I know that staff will have. And I don't know if you want to speak to what was happening during COVID for virtual participation.
I can try. Obviously, I'm not the group that handled it. One of the things that needs to be decided if council chooses to do virtual meetings, and this is to even do work sessions, is to, but more so for regular meetings, is to, if you choose to go in that direction, when would you notify staff, kind of thing? Because staff does need time to set everything up for that. With COVID, we kind of knew it was happening, so that they were setting up for that. But if it's a non-COVID type situation, we need to decide how much in advance that notice would be. But the setup, the CMB scene setup at that time, my recollection, Carol, Josh, or whoever's here wants to mention something. Obviously, the production of what's out there is different because you see all the people and the presentations a little bit smaller. So that's one thing. Everybody was kind of separated out. At the staff table was the city channel folks, and they would move the presentation along at that staff table. Department heads would come up to the podium to speak. There was no laptop at the podium, whereby a public member, you know, handled their own presentation. The city channel person would have access to it, put it up, and then move the slides over as needed. That was kind of how that was handled. I think the city channel also would turn on and on the volume of the person that was virtually participating at the mayor's, you know, and the mayor wanted or could acknowledge them and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of how that worked. Does anybody have anything to add to that?
I think the biggest thing for the CMB scene was that everyone had to have their computer on, mm-hmm. and they had to be able to be seen by everyone that was participating.
Yeah. The entire time, yeah.
The entire time, correct.
Yeah. going to have Don. Don, do you want to go through a little bit about the best practices that Springfield did and see if there's any kind of comments or these sound good, these sound bad, that sounds tricky, and then they kind of get them done.
Okay. Yeah, real quick. Talked with the city clerk in Springfield end of September. And basically, again, same meeting where we heard about the comment on first read. He talked about virtual. So we reached out. Anyway, they use Zoom as the platform. They tried using WebEx. It got too cumbersome, so or difficult to use. So they use Zoom. Whoever's present, real quick, technology, some delays due to lag. They found that for them, it's limited to council members only. Public participation just got too unwieldy using Zoom. So again, it's council members only. They made one exception. They had an attorney that needed to, on an issue, make a presentation, and rather than paying transportation, hotel, etc., they let him give his 5-minute presentation via Zoom. Otherwise, it's council members only. And it's the exception, not the rule. To Sheila's point about scheduling in advance, traveling or something of that nature, then you could. Able to control who enters the meeting, designate a moderator, laptop would be the preferred remote instrument, a couple of things, live mics / live cameras, just be aware of that, put your pets away, et cetera, just preparation. Council members should remain live, and she reminded me per Missouri statute that when there is a vote, you have to be live on camera, no voice vote. It has to be live to where you can be seen and how you vote. They use their regular recording, apparently, because it captures the screens. Then whoever's participating via Zoom would be seen and heard, so they didn't have to do anything special as far as recording or changing how they record. Bandwidth is important. They actually have a MiFi account that they can use. Because again, bandwidth is important. It's the exception. Again, develop our best practices. And the Springfield City Clerk, she said, if we decide to go this route, she would be more than happy to come up and help us set it up and do some training on the process. So, I mean, it's certainly an option for us. I know this came up when we were almost perpetually short a council member for a while. So a way to kind of work around that if need be. But again, it's something that it's an option for us. I would like us to look into and see if we want to adopt it.
Yeah, and I'll just have you said it, but again, like Zoom is not used for every council meeting, only when the circumstances warrant, and especially helpful with meeting quorum.
I'm just thinking of the technology, and I don't know that our own internal technology hasn't changed at least somewhat since the pandemic. So I really want to hear from IT about what we can and can't do at this point. And then we are looking at upgrading everything, so I'm wondering about where we are with that. And that would very likely make a big difference.
Well, I don't think I can let Mark come and talk about our IT capabilities. I don't think the upgrade will actually change. It will make the presentation better, but I don't think the upgrade is needed in order for us to do a virtual process.
Yeah. So I think we have the technology to do this. The biggest thing is the CNBC part, because you've got all of these computers sitting next to each other. Zoom is not designed to have everybody in the same room, so that makes things very difficult as far as audio is concerned. Not so much the video part, but the audio is right. So if we could find a better way to do that, that would be awesome. So I'd like to see what Springfield's doing as far as that's concerned, rather than having everybody in Hollywood Squares. Is there something we can do over there?
What do you? Oh wow, that got louder.
When I looked at the Springfield video, it looked like the virtual participant was only visible when they were actually speaking. I think the preference would be to have a model where they could be visible and like pinned on the screen the entire time. And I don't know what our technology is currently as far as allowing that.
Yeah, I think we could do that. And it just
Just who, or I mean, if there were, or two virtual people.
So what I think we should do is have one, whoever's virtual, and then have one on the entire council, and have those two.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing. I think the CNBC was where everyone had to have a camera in front of them, whether they were in the dais or not. I think that was part of the conflict.
Right.
Whereas what I've seen in most cities that do the virtual participation, it is the person that's virtual that's on the screen. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else is kind of seen because they're in the dais.
And it would also make their production video.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, I've got,
I'm wondering about the notification timeline and when we're wanting to give notification of needing to do virtual participation. Because if we make that notification too far in advance, then this is great for if you are taking a vacation, if you have a scheduled conflict, and not great if you are facing a medical emergency, if you are sick, if you are trying not to infect your fellow council members, which was more of my hope with virtual attendance, was to make it a little bit easier on disabled and chronically ill members of council.
Yeah, I think that's maybe a question for our staff.
How long do you
need in order to set up for something like that? Dalton, what do you think?
We have Dalton and Albert. They are the two that make the magic happen for council meetings. So I'm going to turn it over to Dalton.
I think I'm 3 hours before 4 o'clock would be like the very, very, very latest. It would be preferable by like whenever everybody turns the presentation by noon. If we knew, because me and Albert come in at noon. And so if we know when we get here that that's what our goal is, for the meeting to have that ready going, that would be best.
Yeah. From a technical standpoint, do you have the same or different answer for the already available remote work session versus what we're considering for council?
I'm not sure what's gonna change.
I don't think anything would change for remote. I'm wondering if the technical capacity is different than the general preparation for us.
Well, no, I think it's because since we allow virtual participation for work sessions now, we've only had to do it once. We haven't had to come to this issue. And we knew the person worked out of town, and so we knew that they were not going to be able to be in person, so we did it virtual. So sometimes our work sessions are during the day.
Yeah.
Right? And so the question is, let's say that this happens again, and somebody wants to participate virtually. That might just be as it comes up. Because are you asking for like a hard time?
I mean, I wondered if the time was more hard from a technical perspective than it was from a kind of procedural preparation.
I think because of the council meeting itself, it takes more time to set up for that meeting to be prepared for it. And so you want at least have a structured time frame for whether or not if we have to kind of pivot from our normal process.
And if I may not be remembering it correctly, but I feel like for the work session that was in here, the CNBC is not as important because we're not voting. So you just had the person on the screen participating virtually that way or whatever. But my recollection is
no, you're right. For the work sessions, we're not taking official vote, and so that
wasn't as important. So it's not the whole production
side either, since it's just a work session. It's usually in this room, or I think we did it once before.
Yeah, so this did come up for me one time when I think I missed due to COVID, and Sheila had asked if I wanted to remote attend work session, and we kind of talked about it.
It was by phone, I think it was. It was that last minute one.
Yeah, and I think
I think Nick was participating by phone, so they wanted to offer you the same thing.
Yeah, I think for me, my decision was it's too short notice and I don't want to hassle anyone, but I think also having a better knowledge of what the parameters are would help. And if this is something that we're considering as a council for the council meeting, the proper regular, I don't know, maybe it's good practice for us as council members to exercise that remote meeting a little more frequently as appropriate to have the practice.
I don't know that I would want to encourage us to do virtual if you can be in person, if, because I find it a lot more useful. Do you mean just to practice it?
No, I mean like in the case where someone has COVID or is on, you know, or is traveling and the option exists. You know, previously I would have waived that to not be an inconvenience, but keeping that procedural exercise open has value as well. I'm not saying we should just not attend as practice.
Yeah, and it sounds like it makes sense then for if a council member does, whether or not as soon as you can, let knowledge if you're not going to be in attendance and have the options. Mm-hmm. Some don't have the option to attend virtually, time zones or wherever they are. And if it is kind of an acute one or a quick one, to have that noon deadline so that staff can set it up for them. And then it looks like we'll put together some sort of what we're learning for best practices and probably also hear from staff on this, if there's any additional ones for that. And then I have the question about the audio issues with Zoom, but it sounds like Mark knows how to make that happen. Any other questions on this one? Do we have to change anything in ordinance in relation to this?
I just have a couple questions. If you want to do something procedurally, do you want to have guidelines or qualifications? Like the person has to have their own equipment, you know, things of that nature. The whole, like I think when we did that pilot thing, there was information, you know, on the commission members, virtual presence requirement, personal electronic devices, things of that nature. And then also, do you want to limit or when somebody can participate virtually or not, or is it just to provide notification by noon for a 7 o'clock meeting? So like however many hours that is prior to any meeting, because if we have a work session or a regular meeting or a special meeting that starts at 2, noon may not be enough time. So just, is there anything like that you want? And the last thing I would say is, are you concerned about quorum or limiting the number of people that can participate virtually at one time? Because if technology somehow does fail, if you don't have four in the room, your meeting is essentially over. So things like that, do you want to think about any of that and add it to any sort of guidelines?
Yeah, because I think that was one of the things that we did have during COVID, is that you had to have a quorum in a room to allow for the meeting to actually go forward.
Yeah, I think you all had the experience with this. So the best practices and putting together, similar to it sounds like Springfield had, for those sort of guidelines for, camera on, the things to do. In relation to your question about the notification, I feel like that's what we were just talking about, where it's like if it's a work session, it's not as, you don't have to have 7 hours in advance. But if it is a special regular meeting, I think that is that expectation that you would have a long enough notification staff at the time to put it together. Any other questions on that one, too? All right, moving on to the next one. And this has to be more of a, I have to understand from a staff's perspective. This was the conversation about whether or not we could broadcast the three councils and the work sessions. And I know that in talking to Sheila, there is a cost to that because of our closed captioning and just for us to be considerate of that. So I don't know if you want to speak to what those are.
So I spoke with Ryan when this first came up. And one of the things he mentioned is if, besides the fact right now it has to be in the council chamber if we weren't to broadcast them, because that's the only room that has the capacity to do that. So you wouldn't have an environment like this, you'd have the regular meeting environment. The second thing he mentioned was that the cost for closed captioning is $98 per hour. So if you have a 2-hour meeting, that's an almost an additional $200 that day, thing is, like sign language interpreters, closed captioning people can only do the work for so long before they transition to somebody else. And so with a longer, in a sense, length of meeting, since it's like a lot of times back to back, there's going to be gaps in closed captioning. And so the gaps will be, there'll be more gaps, I guess. I'm not sure if the length will change, but there'll be more gaps between when they transition from one closed captioning person to another. And I don't know enough about how that works to answer many questions. I just know that.
I'm trying to remember, Jackie, was this one of your kind of questions? I don't know if you've given more thought to it or want to comment on thoughts.
No, I haven't really given additional thought. I just think it's important that we seriously consider broadcasting pre-council work sessions just so all the information is available. Again, I go back, I'm always going to fall back to accessibility. And the 5 o'clock start time is difficult for people who work full-time, but I'm also thinking of the mothers and fathers who don't have childcare, people who don't have cars. So if it's possible for us to make sure that our work sessions are broadcast so people can access the information and at least hear the discussion if they can't participate in it, I think it's really important for us to try and make happen.
Yeah, and I'll just add, I mean, what are you talking
about? I was just going to say, on the Disabilities Commission, a few of us were able to attend the National ABA Symposium and looked into some really interesting information about not to use for main council meetings, but for some of the smaller meetings and perhaps work sessions. There are significantly better AI live captioners now, where then there is a live person editing it. But because they are editing rather than doing all the original typing, they don't have to take those gaps as frequently. And so I know Adam had been on the, with Disabilities Commission, had been looking into the cost of that, and I believe it was significantly cheaper. So that might be an option as well.
Yeah, and I'll just say, you know, to that, you know, at first, when we were talking about broadcasting for work sessions and pre-councils, part of me was like worried that we lose the candidness that comes with, you know, this sort of, because, you know, when you're sitting at the dais, it's a different sort of perspective, whereas when we're sitting just in a small view. But I've also had so many people, you know, over the few years ask, well, when did you talk about that? And I'm like, oh, well, at a work session. Like, you go listen to the audio. So I hear you on, like, we do have a lot of these conversations, but people assume we haven't had them. And so it is a way to just point them to where it is happening.
And to follow up on the additional information from Springfield, because we just got a lot of information from them, they do broadcast all of their work sessions and have received good feedback from their members. But they, every work session, every meeting they do that's not closed, they do broadcast. So it's being done.
Just a quick update on that, Live AI. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I understand is right now the technology we use is kind of not, doesn't help facilitate that, but the changes that are going to be made should facilitate that. So once all that work with the chamber and all that is done, we might have be able to use that Live AI.
Can I ask, do we have a time frame for that, those improvements? I know we sent out an RFP, and I know that that's off the main question, but where are we with that?
So we had two companies respond to the RFP, and we are, staff is continuing to evaluate those two proposals and are requesting best and final offers.
And then do we have an idea? I know originally I had thought we might get this done over the holidays, but I'm guessing that's not going to happen. So it seemed like it was like a 2-week kind of minimum of a 2-week kind of thing. We don't do have any idea when that might happen.
Staff was looking at completing the work when it would be least disruptive to council meetings and board and commission meetings.
Right.
And that, there was a delay, a long delay, in working around the commission and council meetings. And I said, we can't postpone the project. We need to move quickly. And so once we get the vendor selected, it's my intention to move swiftly in getting that project completed. As far as timeline, I'm gonna.
It'll just depend on when the vendors can get all the equipment that we're getting purchasing.
Okay.
So it's not like they have everything, so that we have no really idea. And I'm sure it won't take, you know, a year or anything like that, but I'm hoping it'll be quick.
You're an optimist.
Well, yeah.
I think once you have your vendor selected, then you have them established what that timeline will be, and then we can give a report back on what the timeline is.
Yeah, we don't have any timelines from them.
Thank you for that update. Okay, so now moving on to the next one. This is one that we, Vera, you had talked about. And just as a reminder, I'm sorry, staff, it's kind of super boring, but like, this is all like the housekeeping things where we're like, we've talked about this, let's just make it part of our practice. So this was Vera's note that we should make it kind of our expectations of standard operating procedures. When council tables an item, it's our expectation, and I'm looking to my council members to agree with the consensus, is that a supplemental memo comes back with it. Either because we're usually tabling it to give additional time for the applicant and the neighboring partner property, or because we've asked for additional information, or because we're not ready to vote because of the questions that were asked at council. And to kind of look to you, like, our expectation, the supplemental doesn't have to be huge and long, but it just gives that additional, we did look into it, here's the answer.
Yeah, so the one thing that I asked for is, with that expectation, is when we table, if it's because of a specific question, make sure that staff knows what that question is so we can make sure we can provide that feedback.
Well, we're going to lean on you then, too, to make sure that we haven't told you that question that you ask it.
Absolutely.
Or ask us to tell it to. Okay. Any questions on that? Is there any issue from you all on that? Okay. All right. Next one. We already did that one. Okay. This one, and Dekrim, I'll call and let you take a little bit of the lead on this one. Revisiting what it is that we talked about at the retreat as far as emergency, when you were allowing us know about kind of an emergency, how we are communicating that.
Yes.
And then this also might be a good kind of for council to weigh, you know, how is that working for us? And is there any sort of additional clarifying points that we want to make or just acknowledge?
I'm trying to figure it out.
So we had talked about this at, I think it was a 2023 council retreat, where we just wanted to make sure that staff and council were on the same page on what the expectation is for communications, especially for when an emergency event occurs. And so I think what we decided was that if there was an emergency that occurred, that I would send out a general text message to the entire city council informing them what occurred and provide that information. And as we receive additional information, I will provide updates according to as they come in. And so that's been the practice. And so just want to make sure that we're still okay with that, or if there is something additional that we want, and if it is, then what does that look like?
I think one of the questions that came up during one of the most recent ones was, we don't necessarily have a timeline on when to expect if there is an update to the information, and whether or not that update is the response from the police chief, if it's related to the police, or the fire chief, if it's related to fire. So I don't know whether, and again, that relies on an investigation. So I don't know what's a realistic expectation to put on that.
And that's a great question. So one of the things that we had talked about at a previous discussion was about how do we provide those reports from those emergency activities. And so that's one of the questions I have for that we'll talk about during our public safety meeting is if there is a process that we can do a status report that can be sent out to the council, and what is that timeline for that status report? I don't have that yet. And so that's a conversation with the two chiefs so we can actually put together a process and a rhythm for that.
Questions from council on this one? I'll say I've appreciated you sending those messages to us all at the same time. For when I first started, you only sent it to the mayor, which I didn't know what I was supposed to do with it. So I would try to send it then to the ward representative of that, but everybody, their ward lines are blurred when it comes to communication. Is there anything that count, because I know this was kind of related to council. Yeah, Jackie.
So, and this, you can tell me if this is not the appropriate time to talk about this, but my other, in regards to emergency communication, not just with council, but with the public, what is the expectation and timeline for when the city will address the public?
And so, and that's usually specific to toward the event. And so the police department, they have a process for when and how they make those notifications to the public. And so some of it is they do a social media address. Some of it is they do a meeting where they'll meet with the press and have those updates. And so it's really event specific as opposed to having a regular thought out, well, we have to do this, this, and this, and this. So it's that's a hard one to kind of grab our heads around. I think when we, with the conversations with our public safety directors, we can kind of have a conversation on what that could look like. I think sometimes there's an expectation that you would do a press conference on certain events. And what we've seen in most communities is that you usually reserve your press conference for a particular significant event. And not saying that a homicide isn't a significant event, but it's usually more granular than when you decide to do a press conference. And so they're very strict protocols on when you would call for a press conference versus when you would call for a media alert.
Did you want to clarify, and then I've got two other
hands? Yeah, and I know I mentioned this before, we can't like detail everything out or have a process for everything. But so I'm hearing the CPD has a process, fire department has a process. At any point, does the city also release, like, do they sign on to that? Is it a joint statement, or is it just specific to that department?
It goes back to the type of event. So when we had the vibe shooting, I think that's probably a really significant event where we end up having a more in-depth conversation. And we had that press process. I can have Sydney kind of come up a little bit. We are aware of those communications, and we are in that granular conversation, so we know exactly what's going out. Thank you.
I'm not positive if this is what you're asking, but typically the individual departments will send the city manager's office official communication, so press releases, those more formal things for review. We have a rule for the public safety folks that if we don't get back to them within 30 minutes, go ahead and push it out. Don't wait to be asleep. But if there's an event where there's, say, a threat to the public, they can push the information out without having to send it to us in advance so they can take care of those needs. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Betsy, and then Val.
I was just going to comment. It seems to me like the press releases come out once they've like notified families.
Yes.
If there's a problem or when they have some information. So like the whole vibes thing, there wasn't much information available at first except there'd been a shooting. And so that took, it seemed like, a few hours to sort of sort out who the victims were, who was shot, to be able to give some information versus just there's a shooting and vibes. Because somehow or another, I don't think that's going to really cut it for press release. So it always just sort of seemed to me that it just depends on what it is. And I'm sure you all can take a closer look at if there's anything you need to tighten up, but it seems sort of issue dependent.
And we've improved our communication process over the last couple of years to try to be a little bit more upfront and in front of things. But the key point is to make sure that before we send out a lot of information, especially something that will name a victim, that we've notified the family first, and so that they're aware of what's going on before it becomes a public information. And so I know there's some really strong restrictions that the police department utilizes when they do those type of communications.
Valerie.
Yeah, when you were mentioning, what a threshold is for when to do a press release. You were kind of talking about not every homicide is press release, but
press conference.
Press conference. But some, but some do tend to have that expectation attached. You also said that what you see in other cities are specific protocols. I'm wondering if you, what you saw in those protocols and if we can review those, if you can bring that perhaps to a work session.
So, Matt, you want to come and speak a little bit about.
Part of when we do, when we talk about two different things, we talk about press conferences, number one. When you do one of those, you're going to have information that you can put out that is going to be attractive to whoever your audience is. The problem with that is a lot of times when we walk into one of these incidents, we don't have that at the point that we're trying to put information out. So once you put it out, you better be really certain that it's the right information and it's the right time because you can't take it back. So a lot of the stuff that we don't put out is how many shots were fired, you know, just different things like that, because if you're looking for witnesses, those are the things the witnesses know. And if you're pushing that information out, then everybody knows it. And so you can't separate what those things are. So we have to be very careful about that. We don't do notifications like, full disclosure, someone got hit by a car today and passed away. We haven't released that person's name because we haven't notified the family yet. So we can't put that stuff out until we check a bunch of the boxes that just have to be checked before the general public gets notified about things like that.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Sure. I think my question is, this is in the police handbook. Can we review this protocol? It, like, can we see what's in there so that we understand?
I'll tell you this, if it's in a handbook, I've never seen the handbook, because there's so much of it that you're playing with different factors with each instance. Like, you may have somebody that you know that they passed away, but you don't know how they passed away. You may have somebody that you know how they passed away, but you don't know who they are. You have all of these different moving parts and pieces that don't line up in terms of, like, a checklist of making sure it's a flow chart every time they run away. It rarely lines up like that. And so it's very hard to say if this, then that. It's one of those where you just have to make a lot of those decisions on the fly and decide what you're going to do and then stand by what you're going to do. So a lot of times when we're holding back information, it's with good intentions and we'll get it out as quick as we can. It's just better to put out, it's better to put out something that's valuable at that point than just saying nothing. And so that's where that balance lies. And so we try to do the right thing by that.
I absolutely respect the timing and the information contained in the reports that we got from you all, by the way.
Good. And a lot of what we're trying to do is put out basic information quickly, but then all of the stuff that everybody wants to know, the detail stuff of it, then we're holding all of that until it's time to let as much out as what we can.
And if I can clarify, I think, Valerie, your intent of that question is just so that when somebody asks us, why didn't we have, like, you know, why didn't we have a press conference after stuff? It's because, so that Valerie can then respond. Then they have a process for how they evaluate when to do these things.
Right.
Is that, yeah.
Understanding when the process is so that I can explain that to citizens. And also understanding, you know, what it means when I hear a report.
Sure.
Right. Or when I should be listening for a report.
Sure. No, I can certainly try to make sense as much as I can of why we're doing what we're doing. It just, a lot of times people want all of this information and we're just not in a position where we can let that go. But as much as we can, I'm absolutely open to that because, honestly, it takes a lot of pressure off of us if we get the information out there. It just has to be in certain orders and by, I don't know the best way to say it other than by design.
Absolutely. I specifically did not like information coming out too soon, and I think you all did a good job managing that.
The other part that makes this different now than it did, like when I started, was you have social media and you have all of this stuff, and so you're trying to outpace that and beat that, and get your story and your information out there first, even though it's not always the best decision, because you've got a reporter that's listening to the scanner and they're putting out whatever they want their narrative to be, or whatever they think their narrative is, which is all running kind of backwards a lot of times, trying to, I guess, trying to put the true narrative out there, and in the absence of no narrative, people have a tendency to create their own. And so you've got all of these things stacked against you that you're just trying to keep track of.
I think we all saw that in play.
Yeah. Fire stole my microphone. Just from the fire department perspective, since you mentioned public safety, it is in parallel with law enforcement. Public safety now is, it's more of a practice than it is an algorithmic response or something that's just complicated where you have to do this, like Matt said with if or if then. We're values driven. I think the value is to be lawful. And in the cases of anybody that's preyed upon or be treated as a victim or he contacts an arrest, we have mental health legislation and laws, we have criminal legislation and laws, and then we have HIPAA and confidentiality with the person being a patient, HIPAA laws, that's number one. And number two is to make sure that it's accurate, first and foremost. And after that, like you mentioned, the social media, that's noise. The job, you hire professionals, that is our job to make sure that we're values driven and it's accurate. The timely will come, but it's more important to have those two things. We're protecting our community and we're getting out as quickly as accurately as we can. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for that. We can go on. I appreciate both chiefs weighing in on this conversation. And I think, Carly, thank you for continuing to improve and give us this opportunity to move on it. Before we end our work session, I realized, or Sheila pointed out, that we did not make a formal decision of when we want to start doing the virtual, or when we start doing the broadcasting of work sessions. And so with the acknowledgement, we could start at the next one, but there are some limitations, obviously, in relation to both the logistics, both for the space, but also for closed captioning. But
an added cost.
And so wondering what the budget impact would be for that, we'll have to be figuring in. But does council want to start broadcasting work sessions starting at the first meeting in November? Do you want to wait till January? I'm not knowing what the schedule is of work sessions.
Are we talking about audio at that point?
Or we're already doing audio.
Okay, so we are streaming this.
Well, not streaming.
Okay. It's recording.
It's recording and it's placed there like a day or so.
Yeah. But are we talking? So I'm not sure.
We're talking about moving pre-councils and work sessions into the council chambers and broadcasting them like we do a council meeting.
Video.
Yeah.
I guess.
And streaming? Or
yeah, okay, it's everything. Production as well. Because
streaming is product, like the broadcast video. So you're doing it all at the same time. So it would be live streaming now.
I would rather wait. I'd rather hear what it's going to cost.
We can go back and say how many pre-councils and how many work sessions we had this year or in the last 12 months and give you a cost estimate. I mean, just pre-councils, if you said 2 hours every time, you're talking about $4,800 a year. Add in the work sessions, obviously, it's more.
Did we decide to get rid of the newspaper?
Yes.
I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, so I didn't get a decision on that. Make that decision. So yeah, there's some savings. So everyone okay with getting rid of the advertising of board and commission vacancies in the newspaper, knowing that we've upped the additional ways to get it out as notification?
Yes.
About
requiring advertising for board and commission vacancies in the Tribune in Missouri.
I'm not exactly hesitant. I just think that it'd be good to know how people are getting to us now. And that'll inform what we do moving forward. So it's more than what we do, whether or not we do newspaper, it's what do we do.
We'll bring back a report with the 188, the scheduled public comment, and the boards and commissions for you guys to finalize. Like, we'll have a draft or something for you guys to finalize that together.
So could we wait until after we get that report to decide if we're going to move into the main chamber?
And then you can answer the other questions, kind of about the estimate of cost. And I think one of the things, too, that will be useful is that we have had some work sessions that we have chosen to do as live streaming and broadcast. And so to know the like those. And like, I wonder if there's also a question for viewers, but that's a whole separate thing. Okay, so we're expecting to get a report back on all of the proposed changes discussed tonight with potential legislation for changes as well as the additional questions that we asked.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we'll target for the second meeting in December.
Okay, sounds good. All right, you had your hand up here, but I'm also going to stop us. You have to be pertinent right the second.
No. Good. You're so fat. Okay. I was just going to say that I do think that we should move forward with broadcasting our pre-council and our work sessions. I think we can do a couple, take the $200 each time, and then figure out the ongoing cost afterwards.
What I guess I would say is I don't know what the session, what the discussions are upcoming work pre-councils, so let's see also what they are.
Okay.
Yeah. We can't do tomorrow.
No, we can't do tomorrow. It's tomorrow. Yeah. All right. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn us. Thank you.